This is Sandy Wisdom Martin. On this podcast, we'll talk about the formation of Woman's Missionary Union. We need to go back to the early 1800s to understand the context. William Carey has long been called the father of the modern missionary movement. Carey, a British-born pastor, was tending to his congregational flock. But because the pay was lacking, he also worked as a grammar school teacher and a shoe cobbler. But God gripped his heart for the lost, particularly the lost beyond the borders of his own country. He came to understand the Great Commission as his own personal mandate to take the gospel to the nations. He wrote a pamphlet and challenged the leaders of the Northampton Baptist Association to begin a society for propagating the gospel among the heathen. We may not word it exactly the same today, but that was the start of the First Baptist Missionary Society. In 1793, Carey arrived in India and spent 40 years there. That, as they say, is not just talking the talk. That is indeed walking the walk. Well, what in the world does that have to do with the start of Woman's Missionary Union in the United States? In her historical writings, Alma Hunt said, "The same missionary impulse which sent William Carey from his cobbler's bench to a spiritually destitute land was stirring in the hearts of America." She goes on to say that less than a decade after Carey went to India, Adoniram and Ad Johnson left the United States for that same faraway land. You might be surprised to know the Judsons didn't leave our shores as Baptist, but they knew they were going to work with Baptist. So they started studying why they believed what they did about baptism. Turns out, after an in-depth Bible study, they were convinced that Baptists had it right. So when they arrived in India, they presented themselves for believers' baptism. Now I know what you're thinking. Judson was a missionary to Burma for 40 years, not India. Yes, he was. But he went to India first. A year later, he went to Burma. A few days after the Judsons left for India, Luther Rice went as well. And when he arrived, he was baptized too. So all three were in India, excited to be there telling people about Jesus, but they had no Baptist support. So they decided Rice would go back to the United States and try to get people fired up about missions and what was going on in India. Out of this effort, missionary societies grew. By 1817, there were 187 of those societies, and 110 of those were women's organizations. There was a growing sentiment in the South for missions. J. Lewis Shook gave his life to mission service after hearing Luther Rice speak. Shook married Henrietta Hall when she was just 17. By the time she was 18, she was en route to China with her husband in 1835. That seems a little young to me, but that's what the history books say. Mrs. Shook was the first American woman missionary to China and the first Western woman to live in Hong Kong. Well, then the Triennial Convention crumbled 10 years later and the Southern Baptist Convention was organized for the cause of missions. They established the Foreign Mission Board with headquarters in Richmond, Virginia, and a Domestic Mission Board with headquarters in Marion, Alabama. The Shooks became the very first missionaries to serve under the Foreign Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. And so you see, the missionary spirit is growing stronger and stronger. 10 years after that, Roswell Graves, a 22-year-old doctor from Baltimore, went to China. And that was probably the impetus for Woman's Missionary Union. Dr. Graves would send letters back to the United States asking his mother to pray for him and his work and for the Chinese. And he would say, probably much more formally than this, "Hey, Mom, why don't you enlist other women to join you in prayer?" And so she did. She organized the first female missionary prayer meeting. And for 13 years, she prayed and asked others to pray. In 1868, the Southern Baptist Convention was set to meet in Baltimore, where she lived. So she invited all the women coming in for the convention to gather for the first meeting of Southern Baptist women in the interest of missions. There's a point to this history lesson. I want you to see very clearly we were not organized for the purpose of women getting together. We were organized for the sole purpose of missions. Any time women gathered for the SBC, Mrs. Graves tried to gather them for missions. They even formed a group of Southern Baptist missionary organizations. It was called Woman's Mission to Woman. The name seems a bit stuffy to me. At the same time, Dr. Tupper was leading the Foreign Mission Board. He asked that there be a central committee of Baptist women in each state. And within 3 years, every state convention had a central committee of Baptist women. Well, Dr. Tishner of the Home Mission Board didn't want to be left out, and so he asked for women's committees to be formed for home mission work. Alma Hunt says both Tupper and Tishner were great missionary-hearted men. Both championed the organization of women's societies and young people's organizations for missions. So the central committees started gathering at the SBC. In 1884, a resolution was adopted that basically said, hey, why don't we make this meeting permanent? At the same time, women from other denominations were organizing for the cause of missions. Our Lottie Moon was already on the field in China. She wrote an article published in the Foreign Mission Journal in December of 1887. The Cliff Notes version of the article said, the Methodist and Presbyterian women are doing better because they have an organization and a plan. We need to get with it. Lottie really put it out there. She talked about missionaries breaking down from overwork and loneliness and isolation. She talked about the inability to enter promising fields of mission. She concluded by saying, I am convinced that one of the chief reasons our Southern Baptist women do so little is a lack of organization. Why should we not learn from these noble Methodist women, and instead of the paltry offering we make, do something that will prove we are really in earnest in claiming to be followers of Him who, though He was rich, for our sake became poor. So if the leaders of the boards are for this, and Lottie Moon is writing letters from China basically saying, do this now, surely it was a piece of cake to make this happen. Well, not really. We are Baptist, after all. And it didn't happen without some controversy. But finally, in May 1888, Woman's Missionary Union was organized. Well, something was organized. We didn't get the official name of Woman's Missionary Union, Auxiliary to the Southern Baptist Convention, until 2 years later. Miss McIntosh of South Carolina was elected president of this collection of central state committees, and Miss Annie Armstrong of Maryland was elected corresponding secretary. There were two purposes for organizing. First, to distribute missionary information and to stimulate effort among mission societies and to encourage the organization of new societies. And secondly, to systematically raise money for missions. Now, WMU was organized as an auxiliary, a helper to the convention, to undergird and promote the missionary plans of Southern Baptist. What does auxiliary status mean? Well, it means that WMU is not by constitution controlled by the convention. We have our own board made up of people elected by the states or territories in which they serve. It was quoted of Dr. Dillard in our 50th anniversary book. He was director of promotion for the cooperative program. He said, I like the way they live up to that name, auxiliary. Bear in mind the fact that WMU turns over all the money it raises to the convention boards for disbursement. It is certainly an auxiliary to the Southern Baptist Convention. So what was our first offering? The home board asked us to help build a church in Cuba. And so women were giving a brick card, and they had to get 10-cent pledges for every brick on their card. Throughout our 130-year history, one of our core values has been calling Southern Baptists to generosity. They say if you want to know what people treasure, see how they spend their money. After our first offering to build the church in Cuba, we organized a foreign missions offering in 1888. We were asked to collect money to send two women to China to help Lottie. Well, we raised enough money to send three. In 1895, we took an offering to pay off the home mission board's debt. More than once, we helped pay off the foreign mission board's debt. One leader said, "Like all other women, I hate the three D's, debt, dirt, and the devil." In 1916, the foreign mission board's debt was $180,000. Franklin Love and George Truett appealed to the women at their annual meeting. And suddenly, a woman rose and said she wanted to give $5,000 as a thank offering for her husband, who she felt sure would give the money. A woman gave the $200 she had saved for her burial. Another gave the money she had saved in her retirement home. A state WMU secretary gave the $100 that she had saved to complete her college studies. A GA leader handed over a diamond brooch. Lila McIntyre of China gave her only $10 and a long string of amber beads. Well, Evie Brown of Tennessee bought the beads back for $75 and gave them back to the missionary. A woman called out that she had her husband's consent to give her wedding ring. So the total in the offering plate, full of jewelry and cash and pledges, exceeded $17,000. I find that amazing. That amount in 1916 would be equivalent to $400,000 today. In 1900, WMU set up and funded the Home Mission Board's Church Loan Fund. In a 1920 report, L.B. Warren wrote to the women and said, "Please express to the gracious women who had done such wonderful things for our homeless churches the gratitude of the multitudes whom they have aided. Tell them that the $500,000 loaned this year was possible because of them." So the women continued to faithfully invest resources in what they treasured. In 1919, WMU pledged $15 million for the SBC $75 million campaign, and they exceeded that goal. In 1920, WMU began offerings for ministerial relief and annuity. In that very first year, more than $56,000 was collected. And over the next seven decades, nearly $3.5 million was gathered by WMU members. In 1931, when the SBC met in Birmingham, WMU members gave 50% of the entire cooperative program that year under the leadership of Kathleen Mallory. In 1940, WMU pledged $1 million to retire SBC debts, and they exceeded that goal in 43. For 130 years, WMU has treasured the work that God has given all of us to do through the Southern Baptist Convention. We don't receive cooperative program dollars, but we believe in the cooperative program and what we do in partnership together. We believe in our special offerings and our boards and our agencies and our entities. We believe in our associations and conventions and our Baptist children's homes and our seminaries. And we believe in the mandate that God has given WMU to make disciples of Jesus who live on mission. In 1900, President Stakely said in her annual address, "Next to salvation and the gift of the Holy Spirit, the greatest blessing that God has conferred upon His people is the commission of Jesus Christ to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Without it, almost certainly our own denomination would long since have become extinct. No church has a scriptural right to exist apart from this commission." Well, His commission has been our heartbeat. And because of that heartbeat, here's some things that we've accomplished through the years. In 1904, WMU started the Margaret Home in